Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, can you guys hear me in the other room? Good. So this morning, I'm going to talk about dealing with difficulties using the four foundations of mindfulness as a tool. So first, why don't I read the quote on the front of your program. This is the sole way, monks, for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destroying of pain and grief, for reaching the right path, for the realization of nirvana, and namely, the four foundations of mindfulness. From the 22nd text of the collection of long discourses of the Buddha. In contrast to the 21st or 23rd text, which we are all intimately familiar with, depending on our level of erudition. So those are the Pali texts, and this is the Pali, the most quoted Pali Sutra from the Pali texts about meditation. And we spent 2 weeks on it in practice period. We have practice period in the fall, and it's called the Satipatthana Sutta. We spent 2 weeks on it and worked with the four foundations. Since this is the earliest Buddhism, this is the time in India when... And we think, at least, this is the time of India when the statements that Buddha made about being a light unto yourself and following these four foundations were radical. And they were radical because this was a society steeped in theism, possibly the most theistic society other than tribal societies, the most theistic society. At the time, deities, gods, goddesses, the ultimate god, Brahma, and everybody believed in them. Everyone worshipped them. Everyone devoted themselves to them. The ultimate Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Tara, Kali, the great goddess of darkness, Kali. Who devours us all when we pray to her so that we can be reborn. So Buddha said, supposedly, oh, all that stuff's here. That's fine. That's not my teaching. Not my teaching. My teaching is about becoming a light to yourself using these foundations, these four foundations, which I'm going to give you, to discover your own enlightenment, your own communion with life, which is ultimately not separate. And you don't need to do any of this theistic stuff. But he didn't say you shouldn't do it. He didn't say he didn't believe in it. He just said, that's not my emphasis. So in our practice period, we practiced and people will continue to practice because a lot of this comes up in all Buddhist practice. We practice, some people practice mindfulness of body meditations, posture and breathing. I did an exercise on mindfulness of sensation where we just did pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, just as laid out in the Satipatthana Sutta. And people also experimented with points of contact, sensations in their toes when they're sitting. When I was sitting just now, I could feel my toes getting numb. My toes sometimes get numb, and sometimes they get numb all the way down, and sometimes it's just the tips of my toes. So there's my mindfulness of sensations. Just being with it. Just noting, oh, interesting, interesting. But not even interesting. Just Just noticing. Just noticing. And then in the second foundation, which is the sensations, noticing warm, noticing cold, itching, many, many different things. And then the third foundation, attitudes, basic attitudes. Well, we didn't practice that because that's a hard one to practice. I'll talk about that a little later, but it's a little hard one to practice in terms of a meditation approach. The fourth one, mental activities or emotions, thoughts, emotions. People practice the classical Vipassana labeling their thoughts, planning, remembering, regretting, wanting, over and over and over again. So they did that, and I'm not going to go over that anymore today, because they'd be bored, and some of them are here. They try not to look bored, but they'd be bored. So instead, I'm going to talk about using these four foundations to deal with difficulties. To deal with difficulties. So I actually did this once before a few years ago. Some of you will remember this. And the four I'm going to talk about are the four ways of dealing with difficulties. And when I'm saying dealing with difficulties, there's an assumption in the Satipatthana Sutta and all the suttas that we study that you are meditators. So this is dealing with difficulties for meditators. Now, other people can do this too, but this is specifically for meditators. Because meditation, unless you just do 10 minutes a day lying on your back looking at the beautiful sky, is not easy. It's not easy. It's a discipline. You're becoming a disciple of Buddha, a disciple of the enlightened state of mind. You're opening up to it. It's a real discipline. It takes discipline. It takes commitment. Big time. Big time. So the five I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to connect them to the different foundations. Transforming your energy, putting aside full awareness of feelings, opening to the center of the difficulty, and expanding the field of awareness. So first of all, working with the first foundation, the body, transforming the energy. We do a lot of sitting at Zen Center, and we have retreats, and we sit, and we sit, and we sit, but often our energy just gets very dense in our shoulders, in our head, more often in our upper body than our lower body. It could get dense in the lower body, but usually it's around the mind stuff and the shoulder tension and the neck, very dense. So transforming the energy by maintaining the meditative awareness as we change postures, as we move into different postures. Remember that the Zen school was a school that originated the importance of manual labor as a spiritual discipline. Buddhism, none of the Buddhists did that, but Zen school was born with that impetus, transforming the energy so that when you're in the garden, you're having the same one-pointedness, but you're letting the energy flow. When you're sweeping, when you're cooking, when you're bowing. And we have these long retreats here. Oh, some of you think they're long. Even I think they're long. We have these long retreats here. And having the walking meditation, having the work, experimenting with being in your body in the same one-pointed way in many, many different activities is very, very good, so that you can transform the energy and it just doesn't get dense and heavy and you just want to give up. So we're going to have our winter session, our winter retreat, which is, there are 2, 5, and 7 day options. And during that one, I usually have a yoga period during the day for the same reason, yoga or qigong. Someone may teach us qigong, who knows. and that's a way of transforming the energy. And then doing more walking meditation and less sitting. I'm not especially I don't believe that sitting is the way. Sometimes slow walking, transforming the energy by taking that stillness into slow walking, is very, very good. So that's the first one, transforming the energy. The second one, putting aside. Meditation, Zen meditation, Buddhist meditation is a lot about putting aside, a lot about the discipline of just putting it aside. So I had a friend in my neighborhood. Now, I'm going to qualify this by saying to people, the stories that I tell, I fictionalize. I've been sitting for more than 40 years. So I'm very careful not to betray confidentiality. I'm very, very careful about that. But since I've been sitting with people for more than 40 years, there's all kinds of experiences I've had, right? So please, I protect people's identity. I protect their confidentiality. I have to do that as a Zen teacher. I also had to do that as a psychologist when I was practicing as a psychologist. Or I'd lose my license. Well, as a Zen teacher, I don't have any license in particular, but it's not very nice. It's not kind. It's mean to do that. So anyway, that's impressing this my comments today with that. So this guy Tom in my neighborhood, he may have been an ER doctor. And I was pretty good friends with Tom. And when Tom was on call, he would just sometimes have to put aside. You know, we'd be in the middle of having a barbecue in his backyard, and he'd get called. He'd have to put aside and go in and save someone's life. The discipline of any ER doctor who's worth his salt or her salt will have to do, put aside. And his mother died. And I remember in the morning his mother died. He was on call that day. He had to go on, and he got called. He had to put it aside. He had to be there with the people, the patients that were coming in. And that was his discipline. This is our discipline, big time. Big time. We put aside. And the commitment to put aside is key to any meditation practice, and it involves the body and the sensations. So it's the first two. It's working with the first two. It's emphasizing the first two foundations. The body and the sensations can put aside. It's the mental activities that say, "Hey, don't do that." So we just put aside by coming back to the body and the sensations. If you're having an argument with your partner just before it's time for Zazen, then you just say, "We'll get back to this argument later." And you do your Zazen. If you've made your commitment, you do that. And then after you've done your Zazen, you may or may not even remember what the argument was about. I get home, we were arguing about something, weren't we? But sometimes you'll remember. If you remember, you probably need to continue the argument in a respectful way. But if you've forgotten, all the better. We don't need to argue as much as we do, really. So that's the second one, putting aside. And in our retreats, we especially have to put aside. We're actually having a short retreat this next weekend with Ken McLeod, who's a really, really good teacher. He's really psychologically oriented. But not in a Western sense. He uses the best of Eastern psychology. But it's only from 9:30 to 4:30, so that's not too much time to have to put aside, but you might find that it's too much time. You might find that it's hard. It is hard. In Thursday study group, one of our members was talking about being here when we have our June retreats. And we're looking out. We're here for this last year. Instead of going down to our country land, we were here in the building for 5 days in June, looking out on the lake. People were passing. They were laughing. They were biking. And here we were. Here we were, like withered trees. That's Dogen's term, withered trees. But as we were talking about in study group, he uses it positively. He says, a tree having withered is the vivid state of meeting spring. That's the vivid state of meeting spring. But we don't, it takes a while to realize this. It takes a lot of putting aside to realize this. A lot of putting aside. So that's the second one, putting aside. The third one, full awareness of feelings. Full awareness of feelings. Sometimes putting aside doesn't work. Sometimes transforming the energy doesn't work. I know feelings will just keep coming up. They just keep it coming up. So then the feelings become the focus of the meditation. Very simple. You don't have to do it consciously. They're just there. So you... Boy, you've got something to really focus on here. Something to really focus on. Wonderful, wonderful. So my friend Dick, after his wife left him, all of a sudden she just left him after 20 years or something. And he was a meditator. He sat with me. I won't say whether it was here or in San Francisco or in northeast Minneapolis, but he sat with me and his wife just left him. And he was actually not a feeling guy. He's not, you know, some guys don't seem to get the feeling part. I remember my wife and I used to teach couples communication, and we'd have to have a whole list of feelings for the guys, and then they'd have to point to them. Not all of them, but we'd give them a list. Because all they'd say was, what would they say? Disappointed. I'm disappointed. Or they'd say, anger and disappointment. Anger and disappointment. So there are more feelings than that, guys. So anyway, my friend Dick, his wife left him. He said, I don't want to sit. But he was my friend, and he knew that I sat every day, and he sat with me every day. So I would just encourage him. I said, gee, this is when our teachers say we should keep sitting. This isn't when we should stop sitting. He said, oh, you know, all that negative stuff. Oh, it doesn't do any good. But he stayed with it. I wasn't a teacher then, so he listened to me. Because, you know, I was just a friend, so I'm not holding anything over him, right? So we sat, and his anger started coming up. Well, that's a guy, his anger is going to start coming up, right? But then he started experiencing some other emotions that he was telling us about, like some real sadness, some real regret. And he just stayed with that. He just stayed with that until he settled into some just acceptance. And when you really accept, there's stillness there. There's support there. But it's not this acceptance that you do when you try to accept. It's the acceptance that comes from just being with this in your meditation. Just settling into it. Just... regardless of how strong the feeling is, the feeling only lasts so long, and then maybe another feeling comes. So, awareness of the feelings, letting the feelings broaden and deepen to the degree that they want to, they need to. It's a wonderful way of dealing with difficulties. And that's one of the fourth foundations. The fourth foundation, again, is mental activities or thoughts and feelings. That's using that fourth foundation. Next one, the fourth one is opening through the center of difficulties. And this is a basic attitude one. This is using the third foundation of mindfulness, basic attitude. Opening through the center of the difficulty. And, you know, I couldn't think of any good examples except the one that I've used a lot here already, so I'm going to use it again. So it's the one about me. When I So I had been doing meditation at Zen meditation for about 4 years, using knives and forks and plates and silverware. And I was at the Zen monastery in Tassajara, and they said we were going to do something called nested eating bowls or orioki. And then they taught us how to do them. We're going to do them here in our retreat. We do them every other retreat. We either use the traditional way of eating or the more contemporary. So we'll be doing them. So you'll have a chance. So I better be careful not to be too negative here, but I'm talking about my experience a long time ago in another lifetime. So they introduced them, and I thought, what is this? We've been eating with knives and forks, fine. We've been our Suzuki told us never to talk and just to position our fork so that we could really appreciate the fork coming into our mouth, putting it back down on the plate. Now we have to do this complex, arcane Japanese ritual. And of course, the reason I didn't like it was that I'm not good at that kind of thing. I'm poor at detail. I'm left-handed. And it's only for right-handed people. There were no left-handed people in Japan, I was told by the teachers. I was told by the teachers they didn't have left-handed people. That made me mad. Talk about anger. And so we had to do these nested eating bowls. That was a big difficulty for me because we had to do that in front of everybody. And there was one other left-handed person who was a little more dexterous than I was, but he had a hard time too. And it was an especially big difficulty because my wife was the best at it. And she was the teacher. And she wasn't really even into Zen. That made me even madder. I was a Zen person. That was my area. You know how we all want our areas? That was my area. What are you doing in my area and becoming a teacher? So my basic attitude was profane, right? Very, very profane. But Suzuki Roshi was also talking about that time because we were at this monastery, which was hard there. Life was hard there for anybody. It's hard in a monastery. And he kept talking about working with difficulties. And you know, he had given a talk, I think, a couple nights before I went through this internal turmoil about how you don't get the difficulty you want. Everybody wants to be spiritual, so they want to be, I'll do this, this is difficult, I'll do this. He said, those difficulties that you want are not the difficulties I'm talking about. Those that you want are just created by ego, so ego can feel good about itself. He said, those difficulties, don't pay any attention to them. It's the difficulties you don't want that are your chance to go beyond ego, to really open to the center of the difficulty. So I believed him, and I loved him, and so I stayed, and those two basic attitudes just grumbled in me, just grumbled. But I never really thought about leaving too much. A little bit, I thought. But I also would have lost face. You know, we're human beings, we're social beings. I wasn't about to leave my wife there as a teacher because ego also forces us sometimes to stick with something. Well, that's pretty cool in a way, up to a point. Pretty good. Once you make the commitment the reason I ask people to fill out commitment sheets is the beginning of practice period, because I think once they make the commitment, then they're more likely they write it down, they tell people, and then they don't want to. They said to these other people they were going to do it, just like you take your marriage vows publicly. If you just take them privately, you're not so likely to honor them. You take them publicly. So publicly, I had vowed, we'd all vowed to spend 2 months there at that monastery doing whatever this teacher wanted. And he wasn't unreasonable. He was great. But I thought he wasn't unreasonable about that. I really did. But that's just life, isn't it? It's life. So then after a while, I got to be fine at the Orioki. I forgot it had been a problem, except when I was preparing talks. Because then it's the difficulty that always comes up first when I prepare a talk, if I'm going to talk about a difficulty. And I got to really appreciate it. I got to appreciate the meticulousness of it, the beauty of it, the way that it helps the mind just focus on each movement. So opening to the difficulty. But not creating some kind of difficulty for yourself because you think that's somehow spiritual. That's not spiritual. It's the difficulty that you get, the one you got, the one you don't like. Opening to it. Just being there with it. And discovering what the basic attitude is. And then just letting it be. Just letting it be. So the fifth way of dealing with difficulties. Expanding the field of awareness. So we've got the four foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness of body, mindfulness of sensations, mindfulness of mindfulness of basic attitudes, mindfulness of mental activities, thoughts, and emotions. Well, usually we're just aware of one of those. One comes up, but we can expand very easily, very naturally into the second, third, fourth, and it can happen many ways. You can start with anyone because there's no order here. It's just what comes up. So my example, which I have not used in a few years, was a friend of mine who sat retreats with me and who used to get nauseous during retreats. She would get nauseous the first or second day of retreats. She just got nauseous, and then she would have to leave. And she was really really wanted to do the meditation. But any of you who've done retreats know that all kinds of weird things happen, either to your body or to your mind or your sensations. So where does nausea come from? She didn't know. And she was, I think, kind of discouraged. But she, at that point, was studying the four foundations of mindfulness, was studying the Satipatthana Sutta. So she thought, well, nausea, that's in the body. And so she just kept her meditation, kept doing it, and kept trying the retreats, and began to see that underlying and surrounding that nausea, she had fear. Fear comes up a lot for people in retreats, regardless of the retreat. And so she saw that fear, she experienced that fear in different ways, and she just stuck with that, the nausea and the fear. Well, she still had to leave the retreat. She left a lot of retreats, but then came back. She just kept coming back. If you just keep coming back in this practice, that's all that's necessary. This is a totally egalitarian practice. It's all, every one of you can return to stillness. Every one of you can return to brilliance of enlightened stillness. Every one of you. But she kept coming back, and she kept coming back, and she kept coming back. She got fear and nausea both together now. Oh, boy. Well, she's into this. She got the second. And then she begins to notice some sensations around in her chest. Sensation of tightness. Tightness around her inner chest and around her heart. Ah, now she's in the third foundation. I'm not saying that she's counting these. She said, these things happen organically. They happen spontaneously if you let them. Forget the four foundations. The four foundations were developed probably after everybody had these experiences. I would think, wouldn't you? So she's feeling that stuff. And that allows her, when she allows herself to feel the sensations in her body, along with the fear, then she begins to feel more what the fear is about. That the fear is about abandonment. For her, it's about abandonment. And by the second day of Sesshin, nobody has talked to her for a day and a half. Nobody's looked at her. Nobody's said a thing to her.
this is what our retreats are like, I hope. I hope this is what I want them to be like. I know some of you can't deal with it, so you have to go talk, but gee, you're missing your opportunity. You're missing your opportunity. Fear of abandonment. Fear of abandonment was coming up. And loneliness. Fear of abandonment and loneliness. And for her, this was many years ago on you guys. Many, many years ago. Like 25 to 30 years ago. But it could be today. It could be right now with any of you. This was a fear about, this was a fear because she had lost her father when she was 10, 11, or 12. He just died unexpectedly. Just died. And so that, here these people were, nobody looking at her, nobody paying any attention to her. And so this little self, this little needy self is coming up. And that's wonderful that she allowed that she gave that permission to happen. And basic attitude is for her, I have no one to love. I'm completely lonely. And maybe I'm unlovable too. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I don't remember that. But sometimes it goes into I'm unlovable. But just seeing that, just being with that, just taking that in, just accepting it, and it loses its power. It's a voice within a whole cacophony of voices from your 40 years of life, or your 50 years of life, or your 60 years of life. It's your voice when you were 12, and you have voices from when you were 14, and voices when you were 18, 38. Oh, wow. How entertaining. How entertaining. A multiplicity of channels. So she weathered it completely. She weathered it completely and returned to stillness, as we can all do. So that's five ways of dealing with difficulties using the four foundations of mindfulness. Now I'm going to talk very briefly before I end about three ineffective ways of dealing with difficulties, which you guys have told me about over the years, which I have told myself about over the years, which I told my teacher about over the years, right? Three ineffective ways. The first one is trying to blot out ego, trying to blot out ego, blotto ego. Shut down ego. Last time I talked about Jill Taylor, and I talked about the left brain activities, which are the rational, ego-driven executive activities between past, present, and future. And then I talked about right brain, her experience of nirvana when she had a huge right brain opening. And I thought I had talked about them in balance, because they need to be in balance, both of them, the two sides. But then after my talk, a couple of people came up to talk to me and said, yeah, they said that left brain, that's a problem. It just has to be gotten rid of. Well, you know, that happens to be half of our brain power. That happens to be the brain power that plans, that has a future, that gets out the door after the talk. So blottoing ego out with drugs, alcohol, zazen, or a stroke, I do not recommend. It's not one of our teachings. Okay? You can do it, but it's not one of our teachings. And the second one is bad Buddhist. Bad practitioner. I'm a bad practitioner. Maybe you're not even a Buddhist, you're just a bad practitioner. Oh, maybe you're a bad trainee. I'm a bad trainee. Maybe you're a bad Roshi. I'm a bad teacher. We get into this. This is religion. If you look at religion, look at how much how much shame there is in religion. Sometimes you would think religion is nothing but shame-based stuff. Nothing but doing shoulds and shame-based stuff. And Buddhism seems to have all that stuff in it too. So be careful. Be careful. You're not a bad Buddhist. You're not a bad person. You're not a bad teacher. This is just more of your fabrication. I mean, how can you be bad when you don't exist? How can you be a bad Buddhist when you're just a fluid? You're just a flow. Okay, you're a bad flow. You bad flow. You're just relationship. Okay, you're bad. If you're bad relationship, then you're bad. Then he's you're bad. You're bad. He's bad. This is bad. That's bad. This is bad. All I got is bad. Well, if you all you've got is bad, that's pretty cool, isn't it? Bad, 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 bad. What does it matter? You're not bad. Now you do things that are hurtful sometimes to yourself and to others. That's different. That's different. So that's not a way of dealing with difficulties that works. It works in religion, but I don't care about religion. I'm not interested in religion as an end. I'm interested in spiritual life, which isn't even spiritual, which is withering up so you can appreciate the spring. Spring's always here. 30 below, 80 below. Spring into it. This is your life. Spring into it. And if you didn't spring into it in the last moment, here it is now. Here it is now. You ain't bad. And the third one is fatalistic karma. Fatalistic karma. I'm just too scarred by what happened to me in the past to ever really attain enlightenment, to ever really settle down to great stillness. I'm too scarred. She did this to me, he did this to me, my dad did this to me. PTSD, depression, my own misspent youth, all the years of alcoholism addled my brain. I'm just too scarred. That's not Buddhist karma. That's Hindu karma before Buddhism. And I don't, maybe modern day Hindu karma is not like that. I should get my Hindu relatives over and they could tell me about that. I'm sure they wouldn't like the way I'm characterizing this. But nevertheless, it's not Buddhist karma. Although you'll hear it. You'll see Buddhist teachers talk this way. But there's nothing in the early Buddhist texts that suggests Buddha talked about it, karma, that way. And nothing certainly in Mahayana. We can always start afresh. We can always start afresh at any moment. We can renew our commitment and we can start afresh. It doesn't matter if we have to do it moment after moment after moment. We can do it. So those are the three ways that I recommend not dealing with difficulties. Instead, transform your energy. That is, when you're sitting, when you're doing meditation, if it's just kind of dense, kind of rigid or stuck or really tense, move your body into another position. Do another meditative activity. But keep the meditative activity. There's nothing that sacred about sitting cross-legged. The sacredness is in discovering, in whatever activity, some openness, some flexibility, some sense of connection to the world around you, to life around you. And then putting aside. If you can put aside to go to work, to do your job, you should be able to put aside to do meditation. You can. You can. You can put aside. You can put aside. And there are lots of tricks to use to do that. Sitting at the same time every day, that's one trick. Reminding yourself that you are going to put aside, that you're not just sitting down to put in time, that you're going to put aside. And then also reminding yourself, I can come back to that argument with Linda. I've been having that argument with 44 years anyway. It can take a little break. No, there's always take a break, right? We only had the same argument with people over and over again. There's no different arguments. You think so, I think so. That's my ego, right? Same argument. Same argument. Not 44 years, but I haven't been married quite that long. But whatever. Give or take a couple of years. Opening through the center of the difficulty. You don't get to choose your own difficulties. Whatever it is, opening through the center of it. In a meditative way. Full awareness of feelings. Yucky feelings, good feelings, neutral feelings. And expanding the field beyond just the one foundation, beyond just the feeling to the sensation, beyond just the sensation to the whole body. So that's what I want to talk about today. And I think I'll end now and see if you have questions or comments.
I'm a little fuzzy on the difference between body and sensation.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah, so she's fuzzy about the difference between body and sensations. Well, I won't say that Satipatthana Sutra will help you that much in terms of getting unfuzzy, but... traditionally, the body refers to the posture and the whole body, whereas the sensations are the specific sensations that occur in the body. And for instance, as I see that tree and I see those leaves, I'm having a sensation right now of those leaves, which you guys can't see, of just they're just dancing outside the window there. And that sensation is wonderful, but that's not the body. My body, meanwhile, is sitting here. So the sensations are specific, and they can be auditory, they can be olfactory, they can be tactile, and the body is the bodily presence, the being in your body. Make sense? What else?
I was going to make a joke. There's a wonderful movie, which probably many of you have seen, called Being John Malkovich.
Yes.
And I was thinking about this part where you were saying if you're in a bad relationship and everything is bad, so the premise of this movie is that there's some kind of portal in the world, and when people go through it, they become John Malkovich, who's also in the movie, for 5 minutes, and then they get shipped out to some other location. Well, at one point, John Malkovich goes through the portal, and everybody in the world is John Malkovich. There he is all over the world, all over the place. And he picks up a menu in a restaurant, and it says, Malkovich, 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 Malkovich. Bad, 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 bad.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. I saw that movie. Yes.
The awareness has been expanded to, away from just one state. I don't even know why I can't remember your term, but I forgot it.
Okay.
To let's say two or three, maybe four.
Uh-huh.
Is that is the practical benefit that the relationship to the problem has changed? Is there a consulting of more capacities that can advise to?
Yes. Well, this is for dealing with difficulties.
Yeah.
So yes, we're dealing with difficulties. Usually, yes. Now let's just take an example. You want to think about a difficulty, or shall I think about? Let's think of an example together. Okay. All right. Presidency two? That's a real difficulty. No, we have to stick with that one. You chose it. We don't get the difficulties we want. it's Wednesday and the Republicans have won. And I'm coming here to Zazen, as I do every Wednesday morning. And I happen to turn on the radio at 5 a.m. on my way over. I've only got a 3-minute drive, but I turn on the radio and I hear that the Republicans won. Or whatever time, 5:30 a.m. Okay, so my feeling. We have our feelings. Feeling of regret, sadness, anger, confusion. Feelings flooding in, right? Worry. It's all mental activity, so it's all about the fourth foundation. And for me, those I don't have to broaden the awareness of the feelings, because they'll just, in this case, they'll just flow in, right? Oof. So here I am. I'm still doing my sitting. I'm still coming in. I can use any of the other four. Well, of course, I am using my body, because I'm sitting down here. Before I sit down here, I go upstairs. I go through a routine of putting on my robe. I do it without talking. I feel the fabric. I then make my rounds. I come. So I do everything mindfully, because I've been trained to. And then I come sit here. So I'm sitting in an upright posture. And those feelings are still there. But sitting in an upright posture without gnashing my teeth. If I gnash my teeth, then that's the sensation of gnashing. That's the third foundation. I'm noticing the gnashing. And then I'm gentle with my teeth, because I feel the gnashing. And I let go of it as I begin to notice other sensations, like maybe my heart was beating fast at first because I was so mad, but then I just let it be in my body. I let it slow down. So then I've used my body and I've used the sensations to help me with the feeling, and to help me just come back to really being present and really sinking into my original stillness. It may take a while, but that's an example of using three of them. Now, the basic attitude one only comes up when you sink into something like when you have a real difficulty in the attitude over. But let's say my basic attitude is let's say I do all that stuff. I notice that my jaws clenching. I notice the sensations around the tightness in my jaws. And I just let it go. I keep my body erect, so I'm taking care of my body. But I've got a basic attitude of hopelessness about our country. Hopelessness. And I'm thinking again, as I haven't thought about since 1968, that maybe I should go live in Canada. I mean, who knows? You know? It's these thoughts may come up. They may come up. So that's the basic attitude. And I just am there with that basic attitude. I'm just there with that. I just notice it. I may think it's kind of bizarre, but it's just there. So I'm just sitting with it, breathing with it, paying attention to my sensations, inhabiting my body, letting the feelings come. And after a while, I can really settle into just this. And so can you. So can any of us. And we don't know how long the while will take, but it happens. And until we turn on the radio the next time. But maybe then we won't turn on the radio for a day or so.
Thank you for walking us through that process. Then the question is, problems ask for a resolution. So how do we know, or do you expect to get a sign that maybe you're a little closer to the resolution of at least how you think your relationship to the problem would be?
Oh, for sure. But again, this happens when you kind of stay out of the way as much as possible in terms of trying to speed up the process. You know, you can't push the river. You can't speed up the process. But after a while, I'm sitting, a couple of sittings. I come back the next day. And then Canada just falls away. And I begin to think about what I'm going to do in my own family to just try to prepare for the next 4 years. What I'm going to do politically to prepare for the next 4 years, because I really care about this state and this country and these people in it, and what am I going to do? So I begin to become maybe politically active, or say I'm going to stay out of politics for 6 months and just work with the people I love and take care of them. But those solutions only come with incredible patience with this process of you working with the foundations. Does that make sense to you? Yeah, Jason.
Are there thoughts that are not preceded by sensations?
Thoughts that are not preceded by
sensations?
Oh, sure. Well, if you would say experientially, sure, all the time, sure. Now, the Buddhists, you know, some they always put sensation first. but it's so hard to tell. I suppose scientific, in the 21st century, we're doing a lot of scientific experiments with meditation. So Buddhists always put sensations first, but experientially, we don't know what comes up. One thing comes up and then another. So, okay. Yeah. I know what you
Part question, part comment to the last thing about not to, things not to do. Right? One of the things I'm great at doing, and I don't know if other people here do, is I have a problem, I come to meditation, I have a feeling that, oh my God, I'm going to meditate, so I'm going to go away. I can just be in the moment, you know, just enjoy and then, you know, I know the back of my mind is there, and then when I get out, it's sort of this masking, you know, it's not masking the ego.
Uh-huh.
And the problem.
Yes.
And that's something I've heard a lot of people ask me about it too, you know. If I do meditation, will my problems go away? No, it won't.
Yes, that's a good point. Could you guys hear him back there? You couldn't hear what he said. He said, well, he wanted to add a fourth ineffective way of dealing with difficulties, and that is thinking that when you sit down to meditation, your problem is going to go away. And it may go away for 5 minutes or even for the whole meditation or not at all, but it comes right back. Of course, that's a variation of the first type of blottoing that I'm talking about. Using meditation as a way to kind of think that somehow you can thwart ego's power, that you can tamp ego down, that you can totally empty ego in this sitting so ego will never come back.
Uh-huh. And it's hard things like go between these two. I mean, they're both made up inside.
Uh-huh. Good. Well, it's good that I'm not teasing you. It's good that you're aware of that. It's good that you see that. Those are both mental activities. Those are both examples of the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Meaning, if you're mindfulness of both those and that contradiction, then you're using the fourth foundation in just that mindfulness. Does that make sense? Pardon? I couldn't hear what you said. But.
It's still there.
Sure, everything's still here. Right? This is not a blotto kind of practice. You don't get rid of anything in this practice. Everything's here. Yeah.
That's something that I recently thought about is that the confusion of enlightenment and people wanting to go towards enlightenment, and especially when you talk about the left brain, right brain, and you know how important the left brain is.
Uh-huh.
People think that, oh, we just need to get rid of that.
Right.
But it's like, it's not possible to do that unless you have a stroke. But then she couldn't function. She would have starved to death if she was by herself.
That's right.
So like, you know, the Zen balance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. The balance, the
Giving
balance.
Control and the struggle.
Mm-hmm. The problem, again, from my talk last time, but it really relates to our practice, is that for 99% of us, or maybe 99.5% of us, we have unhealthy left brain dominance. We got ourselves into that culturally. We got ourselves into that historically. We got ourselves into that even maybe genetic. It seems like genetically. Maybe because of the survival of the species, huh? Maybe, I don't know. And all we're trying to do is restore the balance. Right? Which is not easy, which is practice. Which is practice, practice, practice. Is that it for this morning, you guys? Thank you.